Okay, so remember we are still in the part three of the Introduction to the Developed Life about the practice of virtues. We talk about that St. Francis de Sales really loved the little virtues, the day-to-day virtues, rather than the big virtues. But the day-to-day one, because they have so much opportunity to practice them day in, day out. And then he tells us not to wait for the big cross, but every day pick up our small crosses. Because there's so many of them, we make use of those opportunities, we become holy really fast. And then he also we talk about meekness and humility. And then we talk about that, you know, humility is nothing but the truth, walking in the truth, like St. Teresa of Avila put it. And then also to think less about oneself. And then meekness, we mentioned about that, you know, if we want to persuade people or to convert, help people to be converted or to settle any difficulties with human relationship, try to be as meek as possible. Because the human heart tend to be hardened when you are harsh, but is softened when you are meek and mild. And then we also mentioned about anger. Remember anger. Anger. That's when you are angry. Don't make any decision, don't say anything, but try to, you know, let yourself calm down first. You know, meekness and humility. And then, you know, humility makes us acceptable to God, but meekness makes us acceptable to other people. And then we also mentioned about diligence last time. You know, diligence, that the four hindrances of doing our work well. The first one is when you do something, you think about something else that you are going to do, or you think about what you have been doing. So focus what you are doing is important. The other obstacle is haste. When you do things always in a hurry, but the saints, they do things slowly and put their heart into that and they accomplish much more. And then the third hindrance, you know, was anxiety. So there can be so many things to look after, but we do them one at a time. And then if the work doesn't require our full attention, think about God more. But if the thing do require our full attention, then pause from time to time to ask God for strength and offer our work to God. And then finally, the desire to do too much is also an obstacle. So St. Francis always invites people to take less but do it well. So what is really important is not so much the quantity but the quality. And then we get into what we call the Evangelical Council, which we will continue today. You know, St. Francis pointed out that charity is what makes us holy, but to acquire charity, the three virtues, which is also other religious vows, are really important, you know. Obedience, chastity, and poverty. And those three, you know, are like the cross that is on the foundation of the fourth virtue, which already deal with is humility. That is like the foundation of the virtues. Last time we talked about obedience, that, you know, obedience is the giving of our will, and there are two kinds of obedience, necessary and voluntary. Necessary obedience is when you obey your lawful superior, you know, and voluntary is that you make your choice. When you make a choice for somebody to be your spiritual director or regular confessor, and you obey, you know, that's a voluntary obedience. And then we also are talking about the submissive spirit is important. You know, some people, they might be always seem to be submissive when they are before people in authority. But and then when they are themselves, they are among their equals or inferiors, then they like a little tyrant, you know. So, but you know, St. Francis always advised us to have that submissive spirit to everybody. You know, submissive to superior is justice, but submissive to equal is friendship and courtesy, and submissive to inferiors is true humility. And then St. Francis de Sales also, of course, the other things they mentioned about that when somebody obey because of trust in God, even though superior can make mistake, but God will always protect the one who obey. For the one who obey, the one is always doing what is most pleasing to God at that moment, doing the will of God. And obedience is giving up the will, so it's the most difficult thing to give. Now, when we think about Evangelical Council, we can think about charity requires self-giving, self-sacrifice. You know, when we have true charity, there's a giving of oneself in charity. And that's why, in a sense, you can understand why poverty, obedience, and chastity, they are so important to acquire charity. Because remember, we mentioned last time that, you know, obedience consecrate the heart, you know, give the heart to God. Chastity consecrate the body, give the body to God. And poverty consecrate our worldly possession, give them to God, you know, for the love and service of God. So, you know, and we see in that angle, obedience, poverty, chastity, they are the giving of oneself. They are the giving of self. There's a sense of self-giving there. And of course, when we make the proper distinction, we find that those three virtues is not only for priests and religious, but everybody should practice those three virtues, even though in different degrees or in different way. Okay, so now, last time we talked about obedience, and so this time we talk about chastity. Now, Tanqueray, which is the author of the book, The Spiritual Life, that is a really good book because it's a manual for priests. In the good old days, when some of you were still young, or even not born yet, there in the seminary, you know, when they train priests, they use that book as the textbook. That's the book it's a manual for priests on the spiritual life. So it's really systematic. So he wrote something like that. Chastity is rightly called the angelic virtue because it likens us to the angels who are pure by nature. It is an austere virtue because we do not succeed in practicing it unless we subdue the body and the senses by mortification. It is a frail virtue, transgressed by the least willful failing. On this account, it is a difficult virtue, since it cannot be observed except by a generous and constant struggle against the most tyrannical of passion, tyrannical, you know, it's like tyrant, the dominant passions. So there are two kinds of chastity, you know, continency proper to unmarried people, and conjugal chastity proper to person living in lawful wedlock, you know, for the married people. So, you know, make that out from the beginning. Whether it's a married person or unmarried person, chastity is for everybody to practice. So, basically, for the first kind of chastity, you know, the unmarried need a very simple, sensitive purity, which will dry away all over-curious thoughts, and teach them to despise all merely sensual satisfactions. And so St. Francis also mentioned the young people, you know, really quite often they imagine of which they are ignorant to be the wondrous sweet, you know, they are like the mold, you know, flying, you know, really foolish and flying into the flyer. So basically, quite often we heard about that saying, curiosity kills the cat. And so quite often for young people, curiosity can kill the soul, you know, in the area of purity, you know, that can be quite often the young people, because of curiosity, get into difficulty in that area. And then the second kind, you know, when between married couple, lies not in total abstinence from carnal pleasure, but in self-control amidst pleasures. So St. Francis de Sales pointed out that quite often in experience, the chastity between married couple can be even more challenging than the practice of chastity for single people. The reason is, you know, the Bible say, you know, he quote the Bible, you know, about anger again, you know. He say, be angry but do not sin, you know, that Bible passage. Be angry but do not sin. That means when you are angry, you have to moderate yourself, not to be got into excess, you know. But that is a challenging thing, to be angry and not go into excess. But, you know, if you are all completely, totally don't get angry at all, it's easier than that you get angry and try to be moderate yourself. So, St. Francis will point out that it's easier to totally abstain from sexual pleasure than to try to be moderated while you are allowed to enjoy sexual pleasure. And St. Francis has himself, he saw some people who are married people in hell because they, in a sense, desecrate the sanctity of marriage. You know, they go in excess in the sexual pleasure, and then in their conscience, they just get to the point of that they don't see that as a problem. So they give themselves an excuse and doing things that are quite improper, you know, in marriage, you know. So they end up losing their soul and suffer terribly in hell because of that. So St. Francis quoting a vision of St. Catherine of Siena, you know, about that. And so it's, but in general, it's a virtue that is quite often, you know, especially in our age today, many people fail in that virtue of chastity. And even in the time of Blessed Jacinta, you know, Blessed Jacinta, one of the girls who saw Our Lady in Fatima, she said, you know, the most number of people, the greatest number of people go to hell, you know, is because of the sin of the flesh, because of the sin of the flesh. So it's a virtue that is important for our time and age. But, you know, when we're thinking about the two kinds of chastity, you know, those for those who are not in marriage and for those who are in marriage, basically, we think about those two kinds of chastity in relation to loving God, to charity. Bishop Fulton Sheen, you know, by the way, Bishop Fulton Sheen, you know, have a miracle approved. So hopefully he might become blessed soon, you know, and when he become Blessed Fulton Sheen, that would be wonderful, right? So he wrote that, you know, God has two kinds of lovers, those who go directly to the ultimate, such as the celibate, and those who go mediately through marriage. So basically, St. Fulton Sheen will see that both paths are paths to love. If the person is not married, the person, like St. Paul mentioned, people who are not married can focus more on God, the heart undivided. And so, you know, you love God more directly. You go straight to loving God more directly. And then for those who are married, you know, the person have to see God in his spouse or in her spouse and in the family. You know, so the person have to love God a bit indirectly, but it still is a way to love God. So it's not meant something, you know, whether a person is a single person, unmarried person, or married person, you don't make the choice to be that in that vocation because for selfishness. You know, when I remember reading the book on the that book that I give you, the survey on the spiritual life, I forgot the name. The Life of Man in God. Yeah, I think that's the title. You know, that book is give a lot of example how people become holy. In that book, they give example of single women, you know, priests, religious, married women, you know. And quite often, the way they become holy is that they use their vocation, whatever vocation they are at, there is a sense of really self-giving. So, you know, when thinking about the married woman, when he gave her testimony, she gave the testimony of the chaotic of the home, like looking after children, all the sacrifice she need to make, but that's how she become holy, by making sacrifice in the midst of the family. And so it's all the different vocations, you know, being present as concrete example, people giving their own account, their daily life, their daily routine, how they make their prayer, how they serve God. But every vocation, whether it's a single person, a married person, a religious, a priest, they all have that strong sense of loving God in sacrifice. So it's a giving of oneself. It's not like just, you know, pick a vocation because I just love the pleasure of it, or I just want to sip it and relax and enjoy. But it's a sense of mission there to give oneself for love of others. There is a self. So it's chastity is something that we also should see in a really positive way in light of charity. And I think, you know, John Paul II's theology of the body do a really good job of helping people to see chastity not as, you know, some regulation and rules, not to do, but it's in a positive light that is in the light of charity, of love. And so it's also important, you know, on the one hand, of course, in the practice of chastity, there is some negative aspect we have to avoiding the occasion. I mentioned earlier, curiosity kills the cat. But also we have to, also the positive is that charity, knowing that it's a path of love, of loving God, you know, because our love become fruitful, because we are chaste. You know, the couple love is only fruitful before God when they are chaste. The chaste mean, of course, they have moderation in their sexual intimacy, but also chaste mean they have to be really careful not try to attract other people. They have to be chaste, faithful to their spouse. You know, that is also an important aspect of chastity between married couple. And so it's a way of love. And so John Paul II, you know, in the theology of the body, really telling people it's important that we see people as people. Because quite often when people fail in chastity, because when people start to view another person as an object, you know, as an object to use, you know, to gratify oneself, as a sexual object. So when you're thinking dirty thought against people as object, you are degrading the human dignity of the person. So basically in our heart, you know, if we love people, if we love every single human person, you don't want to degrade any person human dignity. You don't want to see people, you know, degrade themselves by dressing immodestly also. So you don't want to see anything like pornography or impure image. Because you know that is a degrading of human dignity. That not worthy of the human dignity. So, you know, I think no father would like to see their daughter doing something like that. You know, and so if you love people, you know, everyone on earth, you don't want to see anybody being degraded by being viewed as an object. So it's important for us to have that sense of charity when we're talking about chastity. So, and then another spiritual writer, the Carmelite, Father Gabriel of St. Mary Magdalene, he wrote, "One who embraces the marriage state becomes collaborator with God in the transmission of life to others. One who consecrates himself to God, you know, by a vow of chastity becomes his collaborator in the transmission of light of grace to others." So it's, we're talking about charity, you know, chastity have to do with charity, but also chastity lead to fruitfulness. You know, when a person, you know, commit oneself to marriage life, the person is to be, you know, collaborator with God to transmit human life. But when somebody is totally given to God, you know, to be a single person, you know, to make a vow of chastity, you know, to give oneself to God, the person basically give oneself to be with God to help to transmit the life of grace to others. So, you know, and so that of course when you can focus on God, you can help to transmit the grace of the life of grace, you know, by your prayer, by sacrifice, and also by the time that you can devote of doing apostolic work by your word and action to help to really focus on giving life in the spiritual sense, you know, to give life, the life of grace. So the same writer we pointed out that, you know, people who consecrate themselves to God, consecrate themselves to God, they sacrifice, you know, that of course the worldly parenthood for the supernatural parenthood, which is a more superior kind of parenthood, and it's a way to give life. So it's always in a positive angle to see the virtue of chastity. Now, and then in the practical sense, Sometimes, quite often, when, of course, when we examine our conscience, you know, quite often we may think about, okay, I do not watch pornography, I don't do any impure action, you know, or things like that. I'm fine in that area. But St. Francis would challenge us not to contend with just the chastity of the body. But also he challenged us to actually to look deep in our heart to always work on the chastity or the purity of heart. Because that's the area quite often many people would have room to work on. You know, St. Francis de Sales, he said, chastity of body is common enough even among unbelievers and persons addicted to other vices. But very few can say truthfully, my heart is clean. So, you know, people who might be addicted to drinking or gambling, you know, they might not have any sexual sin, but they have other sin, you know. So you can say, in a sense, they are chaste in their body, you know. Or people who are non-believers, quite often, you know, they can be chaste in their body, you know, but not quite in their heart. Give a distinction, you know. Quite often, continence, you know, to have no sexual intimacy with people, you know, abstain from sex together, is humanly achievable. You can achieve that by your natural strength. Can do that. But will virtue of chastity is a gift from God. It's something that you shouldn't just rely on your own human strength. It's something that you should pray for. And also we have to cooperate with the grace of God. Rely on the grace of God, but also have to do our part to cooperate. So basically, the purity of heart has to do with affection and intention. Affection and intention. So St. Francis de Sales really defined that, you know, chastity of heart is the complete renunciation of all illicit affections. You know, so we have to renounce all affection that can be inappropriate, that can be danger. And then the other aspect is the purity of intention, seeing God in all things and all things in God. You know, so when doing things, it's with the purity of intention. So, you know, we always can ask ourselves, you know, in our dealing with people, what is my intention? Or is the feeling of affection in my heart, is that appropriate or not? Is that only in a level that is not quite, you know, it's only in the level of the sentimental and feeling, you know, or is that actually an affection that is more noble and worthy of what it ought to be? So affection and intention. So, in order to be the purity of the heart, you know, St. John Bosco is really strong on chastity. It's almost like you can say the Franciscan strong in poverty, the Dominican strong in obedience, and the Salesian strong in chastity. And St. John Bosco, he got a lot of dreams from God, you know, to help young people to practice that virtues, you know. We know young people, teenage, that virtues, difficult. When for boys, you know, in that age, you know, difficult. But St. John Bosco was able to, in his boarding school, to create a really strong atmosphere, environment of chastity among young boys, which is really exceptional, the way that he was able to do it. And then, of course, he got supernatural help from God. You know, always in his dreams, he got message for the young people to avoid danger, to avoid idleness, you know, doing nothing. You know, St. John Bosco didn't want people to chat idly or to sit in an idle way. He always wanted people to keep busy, whether it's praying, playing, or working. But keep busy doing in study, in work, and then also to have the supernatural means, you know, because, you know, knowing that it's a virtue that is not achieved by our own effort, but by the grace of God. So you also need supernatural means. I remember reading a book. I think it's called The Good Confessor. It's an old manual for priests to deal with confession matter. And I remember that book is a pretty excellent book. It's a small little handbook, but it's a lot of practical advice that is really handy for priests. And all a lot of details I remember well when I hear confessions. And he mentioned that quite often for some young men, for example, if they have the misfortune to fall into the sins of impurity, you know, let's say it can be pornography or masturbation, you know, for them to be able to be free from those kind of sexual addiction, you know, he basically said there's no other way more effective. Almost it's impossible unless the person really have frequent confession and frequent Holy Communion. He mentioned that, you know, because of frequent Holy Communion, to receive communion daily is required that you have be constantly in the state of sanctifying grace, you know. So if you are not in the state of sanctifying grace, you have to go to confession, you know, before you go to communion. So basically, in that handbook, it's just saying that, you know, that is one of the most effective way to help young people to achieve that chastity, the purity of mind and heart and body, is the frequent confession and frequent Holy Communion. And St. John Bosco would also add that, you know, of the devotion to our Blessed Mother, you know, to pray the rosary. And the Salesian, you know, the Salesian priests, they always have a lot of work and they have piety, have prayer. They are always filled with prayer and work, so there's no room for any temptation to get in. So he really hates idleness, St. John Bosco. St. Jerome also wrote, "Love the knowledge of Scripture, and you will no longer love the sins of the flesh. Always have some work on hand that the devil may find you busy." So if you are not busy, the devil may, have more chance to get you. So St. Francis himself also, many of the experienced saints and confessor would also say, you know, temptation against faith and also temptation against chastity, they are the temptation better fight indirectly by keeping a distance. Keep a distance and also turn away when there's temptation as soon as possible. So St. Francis himself wrote, "Be exceedingly quick in turning aside from the slightest thing leading to impurity, for it is an evil which approaches, you know, it's a, how do you pronounce this, stealthily, and stealthily, you know, it's a thing, guy, okay, and in which the very smallest beginnings are up to grow rapidly. It is always easier to fly from such evil than to cure them." More easy to get away than to cure when you get into sin. So St. Francis also, you know, advised, you know, who are you with is important. Do not associate with immodest person. On the contrary, associate with chaste and virtuous person. So I think for young people especially, but even for adults, you know, when the people around us, you know, always talking about dirty thing, you know, it's not going to be healthy for your spiritual life, you know. So the people that we associate with also will influence us greatly. And then mortification is important. The senses, both outwardly and inwardly, and I think in the Bible there are a good number of passage in the Bible telling people, you know, I think it's mainly telling men not to look at women, you know, in a bad way, you know, "Gaze not upon a maiden, lest her beauty be a stumbling block to you. Turn away your face from a woman dressed up, and gaze not about upon another's beauty." There are a good number of passage about that. You know, so I think it's important for us, you know, extreme example, like saying Aloysius Gonzaga, you know, he was working in the court, in the palace, and looking after the queen, and then somebody mentioned, you know, she's coming, you can see her again, but she confessed that quite frankly, I don't even know how she looked like.
So she would not look at, he would not look at women in the court at all, you know, and sing Aloysius Gonzaga, you know, he is the model for chastity because he just mercilessly, you know, disciplined his body. He was fasting in a great deal. He would nail at nighttime on the cold, hard floor to pray long hours, you know. He is a man who is pure like angel, you know, pray a lot, penance a great deal. But even Francis de Sales, you know, he got a relative that known to be like the most beautiful person, you know, the most good looking person. And then one time when in a private conversation, Saint Francis just say, again, she didn't even know how she looked like because he would not look at woman face. Now, that in our society today, you know, I think in the Western society, we do get used to making eye contact when we are talking. It's hard to look at people. But I think the important thing is that those examples from the saints at least tell us you don't look at people with the wrong intention. You know, when you look at people, you look at that with the right intention, but not with the wrong intention in the heart. You know, so you don't look at people because it's good looking. Then you look at people. You know, that would be the wrong intention. You know, but if you look at people with the right intention, you know, that's what is important for us, and not look at people for the sake of pleasure. That's important. So, and then it's talking about the senses, it's the eyes. And I think it's a bit similar, you know, when in the eyes, I think for people, when quite often apply to young people, when you look at, when you see something bad on the internet, just don't give that a second look, you know, just turn your eyes away, you know. So when we have to do that for our eyes, because eyes is like the windows for the heart, we do so also with our heart. Sometimes in the heart there can be fantasy, you know, or bad desire that come in the heart. Just like in your eyes, you turn away, so in your heart, you just gently turn to something else. That's the modification of the heart. And I think that will be something even more important. You know, your heart is something that, you know, quite often, you know, we may not be able to control a bad thought or a bad desire come. That is sometimes, often it's not our thought, it's not our fault. But what do you do with that in your heart and will is what is most important. So if your heart knows, okay, something bad is there, but I don't like it, I turn to something else, that's not only no sin, but actually it's getting merit for heaven. Because any virtues, you know, like chastity, if there's no opportunity to practice, you cannot grow in that virtue. So there's always some challenges. So the modification of the heart is something that if you do that well, you know, that gives you the opportunity to constantly grow in that virtues. So St. Agnes, it was said that she said something like this: in loving you, O Christ, I am chaste. In touching you, I am pure. In possessing you, I am a virgin. So that's St. Agnes. Okay, so that's one of the, important virtues in our life, but also is really contrary to what is in the society, in the world today. And so when practicing the virtue of chastity is a virtue that, you know, it's like we need more support in that virtue. We need more prayer. Our prayer to our Blessed Mother, you know, the frequent of the sacrament, it's really important that we make use of those supernatural means, and also to avoid occasion of sin as much as possible. And then we have the I find St. Francis even devote even more chapters on poverty than on chastity. Surprisingly, he devoted 3 chapters on the virtue of poverty. He wrote, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for there is the kingdom of God. And if so, woe be to the rich in spirit, for there must be the bitterness of hell." Pity prompt, huh? By rich in spirit, I mean him whose riches engross his mind, or whose mind is buried in his riches. He is poor in spirit, whose heart is not filled with the love of riches, whose mind is not set upon them. Okay, so on the other, I think he devoted 3 chapters into that, you know,
he mentioned about that virtue of poverty, but also he devoted a chapter, basically it's about, how about if you are rich, if you have money, how can you still be poor in spirit? He said, yes, you can. So he devoted one chapter about that, you know, for those who are rich, you know. rich. So you can have a poor in spirit even though you are rich. So that's really good to hear. And then for those who are actually materially poor, you can still be poor in spirit. So it's important for us to understand his idea. Now, basically, how can we have poor in spirit when we are rich? Basically, you don't attach to the material thing that you have, you know. So generous, Bhagita, you know, give away money, you know, a generous donation, you know, things like that. You know, it's really helpful, you know, that will be helping. Now, he wrote something like this: my child, our possessions are not ours. God has given them to us to cultivate, that we may make them fruitful and profitable in his service. And so doing, we shall please him. And this we must do more earnestly than worldly men, for they look carefully after their property out of self-love, but we must work for the love of God. So he gave a good illustration. He said, it's a big difference between having poison, you got a cup of poison, or being poisoned. So he compared, you know, you have rich, it's like you're having poison. But if you are not attached to that, you know, you use that like a king. But if you really, your heart is too attached and grows with riches, you're like you're being poisoned. You become like a slave for your money. You're like the slave for the money. So, St. John of the Cross, he wrote, it is not the things of this world that either occupy the soul or cause it harm, since they enter it not, but rather the will and desire for them, for it is this that dwell within it. So it's not so much the material thing that can harm you, but what is in your heart. If your heart is always, if you open the eye, it's money, money, you know, in your, so that becomes something that really harm you, you know. So you see that even in among the followers of Jesus, there are some who might be wealthy. Like I think that the people who buried Jesus, Joseph and Nicodemus, you know, they are more wealthy people, especially Joseph, you know. So it's something that you know. But the heart is what is really important. Is the heart? Are we too attached to material thing? Or is that a sense of detachment from material thing is important. So to help us to be detached, you know, again, we go back to the book called The Spiritual Life, you know, Tangri. You know, again, he wrote something good about chastity, and he wrote something really good about poverty. He point out that two kind of mentality, two kinds of thinking is helpful for us. The first thinking is you always keep in mind that money or wealth or riches is not the goal, it's not the end, it's the means. It's only the means. It's the means given to us by God to provide for our needs and the needs of others. So that's the means. And the second one is always think about it won't last forever. It will pass away with time. We cannot take them with us in the next world. You know, I think many of you heard me talk about that story of Gloria Polo, right? Remember her, our friend Gloria Polo?
Maybe.
You know, remember that that woman in Colombia who was struck by lightning and experienced a close-to-death experience, that she was being judged. And one of the important things that make her go to hell, you know, have to go to hell, you know, but God gave him a merciful opportunity, even though she was sentenced to go to hell, but God gave her back her life so that she could have another chance. But one of the main things was that she was so focused on money, money, money. She was always focused on money. But then she's really see the emptiness of that, you know, because even though you have a big house, you know, you cannot take a single break with you when you die. You know, even though you have money, you cannot take a single cent with you when you die. You know, so it's this, so it's not something that worth, you know, spending your life, you know, for, you know. So it's, so the thing about that, you know, money is not eternal. It's only the means here on earth. You know, it's something that will help us to focus. But and then when you go back to the Gospel of Matthew, you know, Sermon on the Mount. In St. Matthew Gospel chapter 6 is Sermon on the Mount, but also on chapter 19. Those two passages, chapter 19 and chapter 6, Jesus linked poverty to charity in chapter 19. And Jesus linked poverty to trust in divine providence in chapter 6. You know, so poverty also have to link, like a bit like chastity, link to charity, and also link to trust in divine providence. So in it with charity, you know, Matthew 19 verse 21, see what you have, sell what you have, you know, sell what you have and give it to the poor. Chapter 19, verse 21. So, the Carmelite priest, you know, Father Gabriel of St. Mary Magdalene, he commented on this particular verse. If we detach our hearts from earthly goods, the spirit of poverty will make us generous toward the needy. And then the most effective way of detaching ourselves from material things is to invest our wealth in the bank of heaven, by giving generously to the poor and to good works. That's the best way to detach ourselves, you know. The giving generously to good work is the best way to detach ourselves from material things. And then Jesus also joined the exercise of poverty to the trust of divine providence. So if you read the whole thing, chapter 6, verse 24 to 33, you read something like this. You cannot be a slave of both of God and of money. That is why I'm telling you not to worry about your life and what you are to eat, nor about your body and what you are to wear. Surely life is more than food and body more than clothing. And then continue, so do not worry, do not say, what are we to eat, what are we to drink, what are we to wear? It is the Gentiles who set their hearts on all these things. Your heavenly Father knows you need them all. Set your hearts on His kingdom first, and on God's saving justice, and all these other things will be given you as well. So, Father Gabriel explained, the spirit of poverty will not be lasting and profound, unless it is based on confidence in divine providence. It is only when we trust in God and in His word, which will never fail, that we shall have the courage to put aside all excessive preoccupation with temporal affairs. You know, Jesus mentioned quite a bit of the evil of wealth in the gospel. One priest, you know, he mentioned that many years ago at St. Anthony when he preached there, and I still remember what he said. I think he said it's quite another passage in the Bible about Jesus said about, you know, watch out about wealth and about riches. And he mentioned the reason is because money gives us a sense of security. And so oftentimes we seek that sense of we seek security in money but not in God. And so we have to really seek our security in God. You know, so we put our trust in God rather than on material things. So that's that trust in God, you know, that in divine providence is an important thing. You know, that when we, in the practice of poverty, the spirit of detachment from material things, you know, charity and trust in divine providence, they are the two things that Jesus linked in the Bible, you know, with the exercise of poverty. So when we think about, you know, I mentioned earlier that, you know, charity is the giving of oneself, as I mentioned. Poverty, chastity, obedience, you know, allow people to give oneself in a really concrete way, in really concrete, practical way. But also we see that, you know, when we are not selfish. No matter what vocation we are at, quite often if we are not thinking too much about oneself, but willing to always work for the well-being of other people, really want to serve God, we are more selfless, but giving up oneself, we actually become more happy. We become more happy. But quite often people who are thinking too much about oneself and always want to grasp, maybe sexual attraction, sexual gratification, or material thing, or power. When people are grasping, those are the people who are not happy. When people are too focused on self, they are not happy. In a sense, you see that, poverty, chastity, and obedience, when practicing well, give the person a sense of joy, but also freedom. A person is more free when the person actually practices those virtues. And quite often, the illusion is we think that sexual pleasure will make us free. We think that, the material thing will make me more free because I'm in control. You might think that if I'm doing my own way, I got the power, I will be more free. But quite often when you sin against those virtues, you are not free. It gives you the illusion of freedom. But when you go into the wrong path, you actually become more enslaved. Sexual addiction is a huge slavery, I can say that. A lot of people being enslaved by sexual addiction because of pornography. People who are worried too much about material things, they become a slave of money. People who always want to do their own will, who always want to seek power, they become a slave for themselves, for their own ego. So they got that those are the illusion of freedom, but in fact it's enslavement. And so it's important for us also to see that, the virtues, they are not only, of course, they are the way to holiness, but also they are the way to freedom. And also of happiness. Because oftentimes there is the illusion of happiness. But when we practice those virtues correctly, and especially out of love for God, it actually leads us to what is really truly make us happy, is the true charity, which requires self-giving, but also when the emptying of oneself is to allow us to be filled with the love of God, filled with God Himself. And who alone can make our hearts peaceful and truly happy?